Welcome to another edition of Historical. I hope 2016 is proving a good and prosperous year for you all. Once again, it's myself, Matt Nelson, looking back with a twinkle in my eye into history's hidden gems, polishing off a few dusty diamonds lost in time with the incomparable, liberated and free-minded Wayne Bridgman. And should I say hello to you, Wayne, or should I more likely say, yee-haw!
Yes, hello, I'm here too. Well, damn, Matt, damn.
Damn indeed.
Now, that might give the listeners a clue of what we're going to talk about later on. But before we get started, I just want to say, sorry, we've been a bit late getting this one out to you, but it's been a combination of flu season and... Yes. Family fun and work has really been getting on top of us.
Yeah, it was basically about a month of illness, wasn't it, for between you and me?
Horrible, it was horrible. I won't go into detail.
But he lost a lot of weight.
Yes. Now then, Matt.
Yeah.
We gave a little clue to the listeners there. Hopefully, they can pick out that accent.
Oh.
So, what are we talking about today?
Well, we step once more into the rusty teleporter.
Sounds a bit dodgy.
And aim for a very specific day in history. In fact, it's Friday, Wayne.
Ooh,
August favorite. The 17th, 1877. And we are in the American West.
Again?
Yes.
Remember, listeners, two-parter on the Battle of Little Bighorn. We're back in that area.
And in particular, we've stepped into Mr. George Atkins' saloon in Fort Grant, Arizona. It's a darkly lit, seedy bar. The smell of liquor and BO assault the nose in equal doses upon arrival.
Much like our local.
Yeah. The smell of a typical cowboy, sweat and booze, and more sweat to go on top of the sweat. Perhaps we imagine someone on a piano knocking out a simple yet catchy repetitive tune. An untrustworthy, squinty-eyed landlord with a giant beer belly looking at his patrons for any sign of unrest. A gun hidden below the bar for emergencies.
Probably a shotgun.
Yeah. There is a table in the corner of this crowded inn, and at the table, four men are playing a game of Texas Hold'em poker.
Well, you say four men, Matt. Depends on your definition of a man. Hard to tell these days, with gender fluidity. Yeah. Three grown men for sure.
Metrosexuals.
But one of those men look pretty young. I mean, they may even be a teenager. You can hardly see any stubble on that chin. So, he definitely looks like he's out of place playing poker with these seasoned, grizzled men.
Interesting.
So, he lacks, as I say, the requisite facial hair.
Perhaps he's drawn a fake moustache on just to make it look like he's got facial hair.
That's what I'll do in that situation. He hasn't got the BO issues. He hasn't got that seasoned beer belly. What's going on? There's more to this than meets the eye.
The poker game has been going for 3 hours and it's reaching its zenith. The teenager's name is Henry Antrim.
He's been
living in this area only a short while, having arrived a few months back. Today's ridden into Fort Grant and gone into Atkins' establishment, probably hoping to simply do some gambling in the saloon and maybe a dram or three of Atkins' standard drinking whiskey.
Well, that stuff will put hairs on your chest, whether you're male or female. It will do. But, of course, saying that, they had no—they weren't that bothered about ID in these days.
Yeah, of course.
So let's see if we can learn a bit more about who this guy is and if he really is a man or a teenager. We seem to be obsessed with this, but it's important. So, this is how cowboys rolled in those alpha male days. The beer belly, the BOs, the guns on show.
Yeah.
He certainly would not be going in that saloon for a lovely G&T and a deluxe fish grazing board with triple fried chips on the side. No.
With mayo to dip in it. Lovely.
Exactly. I don't like that sort of
lovely.
Thing.
Lovely.
One of the locals, a chap called Gus Gildea, who's sort of like a local cowboy, is also present in the saloon. He will later say of Henry,
I say, he came to town dressed like a country chick. Stole pants on and them that their shoes instead of boots and a six gun stuck in his trousers. And he got a goddamn holster on his hip. I said to my partner, I said, damn, and geez, I gotta spit when I see this kid.
He sounds like he's a little nonplussed.
Yeah, strange chap.
Shortly after sitting down at this game, he gets into an argument with a local blacksmith, a large hulking man known simply as Frank P. Windy Cahill.
Fan of beans. Presumably, the windy was due to all those refried beans. Delicious. And uncontrollable flatulence as well.
It probably is, actually. That's probably my assumption as well. But Cahill is known to be a bully of a man. Most notably to this poor young lad, whom he had often beaten up and humiliated in the 3 short months that Henry's been in and around the fort area.
Well, if anyone's seen Blazing Saddles, if you haven't seen it, go and see it, hilarious film. We are picturing Cahill as a sort of a Mungo-type character. You know, he's like big, lumbering, sort of simple Jack type of fellow. But generally, what goes with that is that he's a nasty chap. He's probably wearing a very BO-stained white shirt. Not very high on the personal hygiene, ladies. I don't think you'd like him. Well, some do, though. They like that sort of thing, don't they?
Well, yeah.
So he's taken a shine, anyway, to beating
different
up Henry.
Strokes for different blokes, as they say.
And although Henry has been bested by Cahill several times before, he isn't going to be on this night, because you've got to beware the pup. For one day, he'll become a foaming, barking, mad, snarling dog.
Woof, woof.
A dog indeed, Matt, but a dog with a six-shooter. I mean, no dogs don't have opposable thumbs, but still, you know, could go on accident.
You've got to imagine this.
Anyway.
You've got to imagine it, yeah.
He's got an eye for revenge.
Yes, he does. And using the dog analogy, Wayne, his bite is worse than his not-so-scary bark in the case for this dog. When this guy fights back, the bulldog that is Cahill will suddenly be turned into a poodle.
Or a shih tzu.
He may even have a shih tzu as well. And he probably would shih tzu his pants. So, Wayne, what do you get if you cross a bulldog with a shih tzu?
Well, a pretty weird-looking dog.
You actually get a bullshit.
So, as we said, the game of cards,
you know,
is
like
coming...
As
we said, the game of cards is coming to its last hand now. Now,
it's bullshit.
This nasty piece of work, Cahill, Henry Antrim, are the last players in this hand. So, it's going to be trouble, I sense. Cahill starts the argument during the card game with Henry. Let's see what happens.
You know, Henry, there's only two types that come here, dressed like a dandy like you. Steers and queers.
Yeah, sure.
I'm pretty sure you ain't a steer, which only leaves the other one.
Yeah, well, I must be the other one, eh? You can call me what you like, but you ain't walking away from here with this punt, Windy Pants. I got you covered.
Blah! Well, you're a godforsaken son of a bitch. I say godforsaken son of a whore, actually.
That's right.
This pot is mine, and let me see what you got, you little pup, because I got bullets. Bang, bang! And what? Another bullet. Bang! That's three of a kind.
That's pretty good.
Bang, bang, bang! Yay! You can't pick a ne'er do well. Read him and weep, you little privy hole. Hey, Rhonda! You coming home with old Windy tonight? I said she.
Well, Windy Cahill, if you quiet down for a second, I do declare that's a mighty fine card you got there.
You better believe it.
And would be enough to fill most ranch hands around these here parts. You got the right to be sound enough like the first man in the morning to use the privy, but I'm sorry to say, I myself have only got two pair. I got these two pictures.
Ain't enough to beat me, is it? Ain't enough to beat me.
Now, these are queens, these two cards. You understand that?
Yeah, I understand. Okay.
And two more picture cards here. Did you see what those are?
Yeah.
Two more queens. That's four queens. My queens you find in old Rhonda's place on a Saturday night, eh? And that be beating the old two aces.
Well, that's some fine cards, sir. Well done.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. I won and I needed it today. Drinks on me, guys.
What a guy! What a guy!
Hey, you stinking pup. Why, you stinking pup. You mugging me like an Indian. You get here. How you pull those cards, kid? You've been cheating me all night. You pull out those shirt sleeves now. This is my pot. You get now, or you're going to get a beating like near before you get.
Well, Cahill, you son of a bitch, you can't treat me like this no more.
Yeah?
I'm a man now.
Okay.
I ain't taking your bullying no
you
more.
You don't look like no man.
It might hurt like a plane's bug sting. So I'm pleased to God I'm taking this pot.
Oh, I'll teach you where your place is. You come and face me. I'll teach you. Ah!
Hey!
Wow, is that really... opens up the atmosphere, doesn't it? The card game. It does.
Cahill attacks Henry. He knocks him to the ground, pins him with his knees, and begins to punch him in the chest and the face. The kid struggles to get free, but it's no use. Cahill laughs and taunts him as he does so. The onlookers, looking but not daring to get in the way of the feared Cahill.
It's a nasty piece of work. Now, Henry's only 5'7" or so and weighs probably no more than about 135 pounds, whereas Cahill is over 6 foot, is a bit of a monster, weighs over 200 pounds of pure blacksmith hardened muscles.
With quite a mountain of fat backing that up in padding.
That's right. It's hardly a fair fight here, Matt. Henry is getting yet another major case of whoop-ass. He realises the futility, actually, of his situation, and he decides to change the odds.
Bit like this poker game.
Like the poker game. Change the odds in his favour. He reaches for an ace hole. An ace in the hole.
In his what hole?
The pistol, ooh, Matt. The pistol. And somehow manages to get it free from his trousers. He shoves the end of the barrel into Cahill's gut. We think we know what's going to happen here. Let's go back and see what does happen.
Hey, Cahill! What's that pressing into your stomach? Stop punching me! What's that pointing in your stomach?
Hey, what the hell? It's a pistol! It's a pistol!
Now, get off me, son of a bitch! Lumbering inbred old sow!
Why, hell dare you call me an old sow? You point that man's weapon at me, boy! You ain't old enough to handle that there gun! You got a nerve to pull a man's weapon on me like that, because it means you're as yellow as a Chinaman.
These were racist times, this was.
In fact, you're worse than that. I'm going to take that gun. You know what I'm going to do with that? I'm going to shove that gun right up your ass.
Oh, my God! He shot him!
Control yourself, Sheriff Jones.
Okay, so slow motion. Henry shoots.
Wow.
His bullet exiting from his pistol and entering Cahill's gut.
Oh, pow.
Travelling through it until it hits his spinal cord.
Probably crack.
Severing that, exiting the body.
Boom out the back there.
Travelling across the saloon, past the shocked faces of the other patrons and finding embedding itself in the wall next to back a photo of the Gettysburg Address.
Vadum.
Splat. Cahill topples off Henry and he jumps to his feet. Henry, shocked at what he has done, instantly running out of the saloon.
Wooey!
He jumps on the back of a racy-looking horse.
Racy as in fast or liberated and sexy?
Fast. Sure. Definitely fast.
Of course. Yeah.
We're talking about a horse here.
Oh,
though,
yes.
I do appreciate people in the more rural areas may need this spelled out to them.
Thank
he
you.
Gallops away, knowing he can't remain in the fort or even the state.
Oh, wow. Well, so he's... he's a perpetrator now, this guy, isn't he?
He is a wanted man.
Well, old Windy Cahill is taken to the fort's hospital, but it's clear his wound, as gut shots often are very painful, will be fatal only a short time later, and Cahill dies.
The gene pool raises up a few notches with his departure.
Average intelligence takes a leap forward. Later in the day, a coroner's inquest is held, and the killing is ruled... unsurprisingly, criminal and unjustifiable. Had Henry stayed and actually fought his corner with the law, would have been a bit silly, probably. Now, he may have got away with it, as it was self-defence. Lots of witnesses, but he panicked and fled. Because of this, the noose would become the punishment if caught, Matt. He's on the run. And due to his young age, Sheriff Jones, when setting out a reward poster for Henry... gave him what they thought was a humorous alias. And to the point, too, they called him simply The Kid. The Kid, however, was never arrested for this killing, Matt. His first of allegedly 21 murders, we don't know about kills, that happened behind closed doors or behind closed cactuses, in his lifetime. Before anyone has the chance to arrest him, he'll be out of Arizona, Matt, as quick as a dodgy curry leaving your body through the exit chute. And he's into New Mexico, never to return.
So hopefully that sets the scene for the remarkable years that followed. Some background on Henry Atrim. Now, it's believed that Henry was born in 1859 in New York City. This information for years has been accepted as the actual birthplace for Henry Atrim. But like a lot about this chap, it's surrounded by speculation and counter-speculation.
Not to mention rumour.
All that is really important is we know that he was born.
He was born.
And at a time of his first killing, it is believed he was about 16 years old.
He's just a kid.
In that bar, he was 16, they believe. Okay. A young age indeed for doing all that damn dare killing.
Well, from the time that he was born until about 1870, Henry left no trace of his life. So all we know is that in 1870, his mother, Catherine McCarty, who was widowed from his dad, and her two sons arrived in Silver City. His mother then married her long-term boyfriend, Mr. Antrim.
Hence his name changed from McCarty to Antrim.
Makes sense.
So he was McCarty, he's now Antrim. He was a slender chap. So because of this, he was a target of bullies and teasing.
Something, of course, you can relate to, Matt. Sad, sad years, these past few years at work.
But what he lacked inside, he made up for in courage and quick wit. Again, something I can relate to, Wayne.
Touché.
He could defeat the enemies by developing the most deadly of weapons, wit and sarcasm. He is perhaps famous for having a wonderful sense of humour. Always joking, always laughing. He had a passion for music, singing and dancing like a fool.
Again, something you can relate to there, Matt. A bit like a camel.
He was a well-behaved student in school and liked to read and was articulate. Oh yes, he had brains, this one. Oh yes, he did.
Oh.
He wasn't a loud, obnoxious brat like some of the other boys, but rather quiet and mild-mannered. Not only his childhood friends, but folks he would meet later in life all agreed he was easygoing, light-hearted geezer, loyal...
An easygoing, light-hearted murderer.
He was loyal, yes, courteous, and brave, almost to the point of being reckless. Again, something I can relate to. Even his enemies admitted, Wayne, he had his good qualities.
Okay, well, alas, Matt, his life changed forever when his poor mother died suddenly of an illness.
Oh dear, very sad.
Common problem in those days, of course. And his stepdad basically abandoned him and his brother pretty soon after, leaving him to fend for himself at the tender age, and influential age, of course, Matt, around 13 to 14, we think. So because he lacked money, a career in petty crime began, of course, to become attractive for the little urchin. Very attractive, in fact. As attractive as a Big Mac meal is to a client leaving Weight Watchers.
Or indeed, as attractive as a fit and healthy, sparkly-eyed, fluffy sheep is to a lonely Welsh shepherd with a set of Velcro gloves.
Yes, very, very attractive indeed.
Very attractive. Oh, yes. On his earlier travels, the kid had met a guy called Sombrero Jack.
Great, great name.
And this Sombrero Jack had stolen a bundle of laundry from a Chinese launderer. And since the kid had no decent clothing, Sombrero Jack gave him the bundle to him.
Well, that was very kind of him, except he was then caught with it.
Disaster!
As you might, linked to the theft.
No.
Now, the city newspaper, the Grant County Herald, printed the story.
It's believed that Henry was simply the tool of Sombrero Jack, who'd done the actual stealing whilst Henry had done the hiding. Jack has since skinned out.
He done the stealing, he done. So Henry was left holding the bag, literally, and feeling rather silly for being caught for nothing more than a few pairs of drawers and a couple of white shirts.
In the jailhouse, he overpanicked at his predicament and escaped without trial and would find himself a year or so later in Fort Grant. And that is where he had his life-changing game of cards with the horrible, smelly, Windy Cahill that we started off discussing in this podcast.
Yes, remember this is...
So that's his life until now.
Now, with a murder rap hanging over him, he felt really exposed and must have felt that he did look pretty guilty as well, actually. Sort of, you know, I mean, almost as if he was being followed around by a clown carrying 30 helium balloons and a bit of string, and sort of following him around in a crowded street shouting, "Murderer! Murderer!" and pointing a sort of a balloon on a stick at him, jamming it at him.
He felt pretty obvious.
That's what I just see in my mind's eye, Matt.
I do as well.
Now, our young fugitive hightailed it to New Mexico. Yes, Mexico, even then, attracted those sort of people. Not racist. Fact.
Fact. So. Fact. Hard fact. It was also at this time he changed his name an alias and went under the name of William H. Bonney.
Much better, much better.
A name to become, thanks to Young Guns, the film, as famous as the name Billy the Kid itself, which he will be known for eternity.
More queer than steer, though.
Yeah.
Bonney.
Now, for a short while, he joined a notorious gang of rustlers, and with this group of ne'er-do-wells, eventually migrated and moved towards a place called Lincoln County.
Very nice.
William H. Bonney was now heading into the next chapter of his enthralling, alas, tragic story.
Uh-huh.
Shortly after arriving, the gang became allies for the country's dominating force, the L.G. Murphy and Dolan Company, both Irish immigrants with a ruthless streak in them.
Well, nice to see they made a company out of it, at least. They're very organised. Now, Lincoln County was in the middle of a bloody turf war. Tensions were building between the Murphys and Dolan Company. And with their new competition, an Englishman called John Tunstall. Nasty bit of work. Now, the Lincoln County War that was raging...
Like a hormonal teenager being told they can't go out on a Friday night.
I know, it's so unfair. It was built up into numerous feuds. It had erupted involving other parties since the late 1860s, actually. But the bitter feud between Englishman John Tunstall against Irishman James Dolan, classic match-up there, was the most recent and notorious and caused the most bloodshed, Matt. And as Oscar Wilde would say, was about to go spastic.
Listeners, listeners to outside of the British Isles will know that the history between the Irish and the English has not always been without a few bumps in the road.
Friendly banter.
So Dolan and Murphy were pretty keen to make sure this jumped-up Englishman,
in their eyes,
didn't boss him around in their new country. And for his part, Tunstall was keen to do business and would not be proud-beaten or threatened by these Irish troublemakers. He was, after all, a ruddy Englishman.
Now, America has always been a place where business talks and nonsense walks. and both Dolan and Tunstall had one objective: to form a monopoly in Lincoln County. That's not the board game. That's a crime, a monopoly, Matt. But a monopoly allows but one, not two, to control it. One has got to walk. Murphy and Dolan Company had already established their enterprise called the Santa Fe Ring. A bit of a clue to any police looking on. Now, that includes the county sheriff and now this group of rustlers backing them up as enforcers.
And in 1877, it kicked off royally between Murphy, Dolan versus Tunstall.
Oh.
Murphy, though, became ill a year later. Young Guns makes you believe it was all Murphy stirring up the trouble.
He died, didn't he?
Yeah, but it was actually his young apprentice. There can only be one. There can only be two. One master and one apprentice.
From now on, you will not be known as James Dolan. You will henceforth be known as Darth Nastius. Arise and take your place at my side. Together we will rule Lincoln County as father and son.
What is my bidding, O master?
Now, that obviously never happened. We just wanted to bask in the reflected glory of Star Wars. Bit cheap, but...
The Force Awakens.
Brilliant!
No, actually, Murphy simply died. And the power...
Unlimited power!
Went to James Dolan, who became the Big Cheese.
Or, based on the fact that he was Irish, the head potato! In Lincoln County.
That's right, yes. Now... This John Tunstall fellow was a cocky newcomer, keen to try out his skills, charm and fantastic Englishness on the West. He bet that his sophistication and brains could outwit these inferior ruffians. He wrote thusly home to his father about his plans there.
Everything in New Mexico that pays at all, you may say, is worked by a ring. Now, there is an Indian ring, the army ring, and of course the political ring, and half a dozen rings. Now, it's necessary either to get into a ring or to make a ring for yourself. Now, I am at present at work making a ring. A ring of criminals.
Ooh. One ring to rule them all, it seems. Alas, we have already done the Lord of the Rings joke in a previous podcast, so can't really repeat that.
Now, the big issues with the plan of generating the ring was as plain as can be. It was that Dolan and the Santa Fe ring were the law and were already in place. And mighty pissed at this toffee-nosed English knob-end.
And meanwhile, the kid was not enjoying being with the bunch of rustlers and didn't care much for their thuggish ways. So he left the gang.
Very brave.
He ended up trying to steal a horse that happened to belong to...
John Tunstall. Very stupid.
And he was arrested, but John Tunstall knew the kid was a member of this gang in the pay of the Dolans. And after meeting the boy in jail, instead of pressing charges, he offered the boy employment, which he accepted.
Ah, clever. So the bond between him and Tunstall was as strong as an ox, and very important to this story. William H. Bonney, for the first time since the death of his mother, now finally found a home and a mentor and ally he respected. He was welcomed aboard and immediately clicked with his new friends. In fact, a regulator from the Lincoln War would later state...
What, the kid? Aye, he was the centre of interest everywhere he went, and though heavily armed, he seemed quite gentlemanly, as a college-bred youth would be. He quickly became acquainted with everyone, and because of his humour and pleasing personality, he grew to be a community favourite. So help me God, I gotta spit. He was great. Really great.
But alas, William's happiness won't last. On February the 18th, 1878, Sheriff Brady, under the orders of Dolan, of course, remember, arrived at Tunstall's farm with a posse. For those who don't know, a posse is just like a gang of armed men. He arrived with a posse on trumped-up charges with the intention of putting Tunstall out of business and taking all of his horses and cattle, as one did in those days. But Tunstall was tipped off about this, and while he left his cattle there, he would not let them confiscate the very valuable horses. So Tunstall and a handful of his men, including the young William H. Bonney, herded the horses down to Lincoln before the sheriff and the posse arrived. But Brady realised on arrival to Tunstall Farm and sent the posse to give chase to the group.
In the afternoon of that day, the Tunstall group rode towards a canyon. William H. Bonney and a chap called John Middleton rode drag.
Sort of behind the rest.
Now, why Tunstall, Richard Brewer and Rob Widenman led the way, a flock of wild turkeys.
Damn got turkeys.
Bloody turkeys. Got the attention of Brewer and Widenman, and pulling out their rifles, they whooped as only cowboys can whoop and ran after them. Wayne, can you give us an example of a whoop?
Woo! Gotta give me a turkey! Turkey, turkey, woo!
Yes, thank you.
Typical example.
Off they went, right? Off these guys went. And they were supposed to be guarding Tunstall. They went whooping off into the distance track after these turkeys and left Tunstall alone. At the same time, William H. Bonney, riding drag, saw a posse galloping towards
the posse from earlier.
Yeah, now totally unarmed and undefended Englishmen. But they were a fair distance away and the posse was closing in on their boss fast.
God. Well, the kid spurred his horse forward to warn Brewer and Windenman, who were chasing after these damn turkeys and whooping like a bunch of dicks. The posse of outlaws easily caught up with John Tunstall and shot him down in cold blood.
Bastards!
Alas, in the end, all his wit and guile could not outmanoeuvre a Colt six-shooter. So help me God, double damn it won't!
That's a triple damn moment just there. William H. Bonney and Richard Brewer and the rest of John's staff were devastated.
They would be.
But knew if they had tried to save him, the result would have been the same. Plus, they would have died. So in grief, they rode away from the scene, promising, though, Wayne, they'd fight another day.
And hopefully catch those delicious, delicious turkeys they were so obsessed with.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.
That's an excellent impression there, Matt. Thank you for that. Thanks for that. So the very next day, Richard Brewer and William H. Bonney swore out affidavits, then were issued warrants of arrest for the slaying of John Tunstall. Now, that's a turnaround. Mm.
Yes, they'd been deputised to bring the killers to heel, Matt. Hooray!
But when they walked into the Dolan establishment to arrest the men clearly, clearly responsible for the death of Tunstall, they found the bent copper, Sheriff Brady, present, and he refused to accept the permits that they had. And in a shocking turn of events, he arrested them instead.
Oh, my God. Well, the men confiscated their weapons, including a Winchester rifle Tunstall had given the kid, and cursed and abused them verbally. This is terrible. The kid was released 2 days later and had missed out on Tunstall's funeral, Matt.
So the kid had tried to do it the lawful way. We want to stress this. They did try to do it the lawful way first, but it was proven that it was not possible. The law was an ass. And now it's time for the kid to kick that ass.
Learned his lesson. So more deputations followed, and the group went by the name of the Regulators.
Regulators! Mount up!
It's pretty catchy, isn't it? But frustrated by Sheriff Brady's interference and the governor turning a blind eye to what was going on in the county, the Regulators were unable to do things the law way, in inverted commas.
Yes.
And had no choice but to fight fire with pretty dangerous burning fire.
Of their
lawless fire, Matt.
In all, a lot of fire being fought with fire means the whole thing's going to go up like a ruddy
bonfire.
And
someone's going to get burnt.
Yes, so stay out the kitchen if you don't want to get burnt. Over the course of the war, there were quite a number of regulators. But the main ones we can think about were Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
So William H. Bonney, at this time now, goes by the name of Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
Richard Brewer.
Heard of him.
Chavez.
Check out his photo. He looks nothing like Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah. Jim French. Doc Sherlock.
Of course, yeah.
Charlie Bowdry.
Yeah.
Tom O'Folliard. To name but a few.
Oh, okay.
They were over 40, actually, at one point, regulators. So it was it was a pretty big gang.
They lived to a good age.
Yeah.
So now, the carnage begins in earnest, Matt. The Regulators first tracked down Bill Morton and Frank Baker to arrest them, in inverted commas. And things turned nasty pretty quickly, and both Bill and Frank were killed,
possibly, though, execution style. So it may well have been a cold-blooded murder.
Well, almost certainly, I'd say, Matt, because this was after they surrendered to the Regulators, who rightfully believed that if the prisoners were turned over to the sheriff, who was as bent as a bendy bus, or as bent as a 1970s variety performer, shut that door, they would be released without charge.
Yes, so. And the sheriff, and which is right, the sheriff was in the pay pocket of James Dolan.
Yeah.
And would have acted against Billy the Kid and the Regulators, right? So during the killing, though, Billy the Kid also shot a regulator.
Ooh.
So this is someone on his side, called William McCluskey.
Maybe something wasn't that friendly with.
Well, who was on friendly terms and sympathetic towards Morton and Baker, who they were about to kill.
A mole?
And they believed he was a spy, yeah, or a mole.
Mm.
There is a lot of evidence that points towards William McCluskey being a Dolan plant in the Regulators.
Oh.
But we will never get to find this out because his brains were splattered across New Mexico. Revenge was coming thick and fast.
Well, next to feel the wrath was the non-steer-like bent sheriff himself. Six Regulators, including the kid, ambushed and killed Sheriff Brady and his deputy, John Hindman. The kid would later confess to Mrs. McSween that he was aiming at Deputy Bill Matthews, who narrowly escaped the shooting and shot the sheriff in error.
But he never shot the deputy.
No, but he was aiming for him.
Yeah, he was.
Though it's very doubtful that this was in error, though, as the kid was known to be a crack shot.
Yes, he was good at shooting the buttocks. The kid felt Matthews was most responsible for Tunstall's death, the deputy, remember? By sending the posse, which was made up of convicted killers, to go after Tunstall. And that Matthew knew what was going to happen when these killers showed up to arrest Tunstall. So he's kind of like premeditated murder by sending this particular group of posses after Tunstall. But instead, Matthews got the last laugh when the kid stepped out in the street to reclaim his rifle, which lay next to Sheriff Brady. Sheriff Brady's corpse, Matthew fired, but the bullet hit the kid in the hip and the kid rolled away and escaped. But he was wounded.
Wow.
Yep.
Action. Well, a few weeks later, the Regulators were camped up a mountain pass. And Richard Brewer and the kid were reading the newspaper, in fact, actually, and were realising how infamous the killing of the sheriff had made them. Though it's fair to say, the newspaper article stated that the sheriff was taking bribes and that he got what was coming to him.
Sounds like he got what was coming to him. He sounds like a pretty unpleasant character.
Yeah, and the regulators were clearly in a turd factory worth of poo here. They were in trouble now with the law. If you kill a sheriff, no one's going to give you any sort of remiss here. So you can't just gun a sheriff down without brown mucky stuff hitting the whirling fan.
And rumour had also reached them that Dolan had put a bounty on the regulator's head, and specifically a larger one on the head of Billy the Kid. One such bounty hunter was a rather amusingly named individual called Buckshot Roberts. Now that is a full-on 10 pints of extra-strong lager name, if ever I heard one. And he was at the moment bearing down on the regulators. Richard Brewer, the leader of the gang of regulators, is keen to get the hell out of Dodge before the bounty hunters catch up with them.
Regulators! Mount up! Come on, we gotta skin out of here. We gotta keep on the move. The law'll be on us. We gotta get out of Lincoln and lose ourselves up the mountain until this heat dies down. We're getting some serious heat and heat for killing Brady and Dolan's boys.
And the Lord's gonna get us. The Lord's dog. It's a dog. Isn't that right, Billy? Isn't it, Billy? It's a dog. We're gonna kick it, ain't we?
That's right, Charlie. The law's never gonna catch us, Richard. We got righteousness on our side. Let them guys kill John Stones and Brady. They were the worst of them for letting it happen. We gotta see justice done here, Richard. We can't run. We should go back to Lincoln. They won't expect that. Take this goddamn fight back to the goddamn Dolan, this goddamn man, goddamn it.
Dolan, yeah, he's like a fat sow. He all gone in the head. He ain't all there. He probably gonna, like, die on the shit.
Shut up, Charlie. You're shooting faster than you're thinking, boy. Billy, you're brave and you're a crazy son of a bitch, though, with it. You're gonna get us all killed, boy. You're gonna get us all killed. Now, I'm the leader of this here regulators. Until that changes, we do as I declare. You see what I'm saying? We mount up, we skin out. Regulators, mount up!
Gee, holy mother of God. God damn it. Who's that coming up the pass?
I don't know who it is.
Hell, looks like a right seasoned old bear of a fighter. He's carrying at least three guns, two rifles. He's got a face like a never sat on a bear hat for a jacket. You know, Richard? I don't think we need to run, because trouble just goddamn found us.
No, I recognize him. He's bad. He's bad. He's going to kick our ass.
You're right, Charlie. I recognize him, too. That's only Buckshot Roberts. Oh, man, he's like a disease, that guy. He's killed more people than the Galactic Empire and smallpox put together. We can't have him on our tail. We got to fix this, guys. This is what killing Brady has done. It's got us all manner of man coming on our tail.
Ooh-wee! Goddamn, Brewer! Finally speaking my language! Let's give this box of rights a taste of the kid! I say we hide in the hills, smoke him out. Then what should we do with him, Charlie?
He's gonna die! He's gonna die! Yes, he is! He's gonna die like a dog!
You got it,
like
Charlie!
Like a dog!
Yeah. Regulators! Find a place to ambush this Buckshot Roberts. Come on, move your hides. Let's show this guy. He don't hunt us. We hunt him. After me, boys. Woo, 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 woo.
So, the regulators set up an ambush to take down the legendary Buckshot Roberts. But a legend he was for a bloody good reason. Like a yogi, Buckshot sensed the ambush and hid in an outhouse with his arsenal of weapons. A vicious firefight kicked off, Buckshot holding his own against all the regulators.
At one point, the regulators were unloading into the toilet where Buckshot was. The end result, though, was thankfully one dead Buckshot Roberts. Killed, it was reported, by our old friend Billy the Kid, our hero. Or rogue, depends how you look at it, really, if you're law-abiding or not. But at a cost, because Richard Brewer, the leader of the regulators, also lay dead. I wonder if he was shot in the front or back. Neither. He was shot between his baby blues. His eyes. He had blue eyes. He also managed to wound two other regulators, including Charlie.
Ah.
Sad.
Hey, Charlie! You okay? You're hit too! There's blood coming down your face! Where you hit, goddammit?
Now we're in fun! Just my head! Just my head!
A brain shot. Okay, it's not fatal then, guys. It's not fatal. I was worried it's more serious. Charlie's just been shot in the brain. Let's go, Brewer. God rest his soul. And I think we need to go back to Lincoln and teach this here Dolan a lesson. For Turnstall.
Hell yeah! Hell yeah!
So the Regulators, mourning the loss of their original leader, in time returned to Lincoln to strike back. But now it was Dolan's turn to set up a trap, with the help of the American Army and a Colonel Dudley with the Fort Stanton Brigade. Yep, the stakes were upped and the army was drafted right in. The Kid and a number of the Regulators, along with Alex McSween, a close friend of theirs, were trapped and surrounded in McSween's home in Lincoln by Dolan's men.
A 5-day siege ensued, with people shooting off out of windows and from behind sandbags and
disgusting
barricades. The house was surrounded and the Regulators were trapped inside with no obvious option for escape. Dolan made his move to end the stalemate of the siege and set the house on fire.
Should have done it earlier.
Should have done it day
five
one.
5 days ago.
It would have made it much easier. The Kid, being a brave sort, calmed to the panic in the house, making jokes about roasted marshmallows and spit roasting.
That's the cooking kind, listeners.
Yeah, not the other. And he came up with a plan to escape. And it was as hot as my pants.
But it was desperate. Because 4 Regulators would make a break out the back door and run towards Tunstall's store through a gate on the east side of the yard, so thereby drawing the line of fire to them. Meanwhile, McSween and the others, they'd run up to the rear wall, through the back gate, and lose themselves in the dark by the river. It was night time, by the way. Otherwise, it wouldn't have worked. If they all broke out in these different directions at the same time, the attacking forces would be confused, they thought, and shoot wildly, probably while shouting something like, "Damn, where'd he go?"
It was about 9 o'clock at night when they made their move. The Kid would recall that the flames from the fire
made it almost as light as day because it's a short distance. Right? Yeah.
Yes, and the Kid led his group towards Tunstall's store as planned, but were met by gunfire coming from the store, so they made a quick dash for the river to meet the others. Meanwhile, McSween and his group ran for their lives towards the back gate.
Ooh.
But they too received a volley of bullets.
God.
Luckily for the others, McSween managed to catch all the bullets in his chest.
Oh, thank God.
And was mowed down. It was pure chaos and pandemonium. Guns were blazing from all around and men falling dead or wounded. When the smoke cleared, the Lincoln War was over, as was the life of McSween.
Yeah.
Actually, yes. It's sad. It's very sad. This guy died.
Well, McSween had
absolutely
acted.
Peppered.
He was like a pincushion. McSween had acted as a human, quite literally human bullet magnet, and was peppered all over with lead.
I don't know why I'm finding it so funny.
It's very sad. So it was obvious, as dead as a dodo, and 4 other Regulators were also dead.
Thanks, Billy, for the great plan. Thanks to Ruddy Lot.
Thanks for that.
Not a great plan.
On the Dolan side, however, they lost one man named Robert Beckwith, whose death was pinned on the Kid, of course. Following the aftermath, the victors, as they did throughout history, got drunk and looted, while the Kid and the survivors slipped away into the darkness to fight another day.
2 months passed, and a new governor of Lincoln offered an amnesty to the warring sides of the Lincoln War. There was talks of pardons, so the Kid put out a peace offering to Dolan and his gang.
So the Regulators and Dolan's gang met up February 1879 now and agreed that no one kills anyone or grasses up anyone on either side type of pack. But it lasted but a few short drunken hours. I mean, put these two gangs together, give them drink, sure, it's not going to end well. This happened when a member of Dolan's crew killed Alex McSween's attorney in cold blood.
Yeah. The Kid and his best mate, Tom O'Folliard, got the heck out of there as soon as they could and the kid realising that the full weight of the law would soon come down on anyone associated with the killing of yet another law official, he decided maybe the time was right to do what he just agreed not to do and grass the Dolans up to the new governor, a governor called Governor Wallace. And on March the 13th, 1879, Billy the Kid writes to Governor Lew Wallace for the first time.
Dear Sir, I've heard that you'll give $1,000 for my body, which, as I can understand, it means alive as a witness. I know it's as a witness against those that murdered Mr. Chapman. If it was so that I could appear at court, I could give the desired information. But I have indictments against me for things that happened in the late Lincoln County War, and I'm afraid to give up myself because my enemies would kill me. The day Mr. Chapman was murdered, I was in Lincoln, at the request of good citizens, to meet Mr. J.J. Dolan to meet as friends, so as to be able to lay aside our arms and go to work. I was present when Mr. Chapman was murdered, and know who did it, and if it were not for those indictments, I would have made it clear before now. If it's in your power to annul those indictments, I hope you will do so as to give me chance to explain. Waiting for an answer, I remain your obedient servant, W.H. Bonney. Governor Lew Wallace's reply to Billy the Kid's letter above goes thus.
Come to the house at 9 o'clock next Monday night alone. I don't mean in my office, I mean my residence. Follow along the foot of the mountain south of the town and come in on that side. And knock on the east door. I have the authority to exempt you from prosecution if you will testify to what you say you know. The object of the meeting at Squire Wilson's is to arrange the matter in a way to make your life safe. To do that, the utmost secrecy is to be used. So come along, don't tell anybody, not a living soul, where you're coming or that the objective of the meeting. If you could trust Jesse Evans, then you can trust me. Lew Wallace.
So, how would you feel if you got a letter like that? Would you be able to trust them? I'm not so sure. In any case, the kid met with the governor and agreed to submit to a staged arrest, with the understanding that once arrested, he would testify against the murderers of the lawyer, and as a consequence, he'd be pardoned for his past crimes. All sorted then, lovely. A couple of days later, the kid and Tomo Folliard surrendered to Sheriff as planned. The governor interviewed the kid by asking him about the rustlers' hideouts and about the rustling activities in the territory. The kid held nothing back and told everything that Governor Wallace wanted to know. So the kid did his bit to the letter. Now it was Wallace's turn.
The following month, the kid began his court appearances, but a major issue was that the judge and the prosecutor were Dolan's men, bought and paid for. The defendants were either pardoned or acquitted. Yeah. The kid, though, remember, the kid is actually on the prosecution side, not a defendant. The kid wasn't so lucky. Dolan, again, had the power, and he wanted the kid dead. The kid realised he was to be sentenced to death, and that Governor Wallace suddenly stopped writing back to Billy and went absent without leave, and he was basically as useful as a chocolate teapot or chocolate fire guard. Yeah. And he realised he was in a pile of buffalo dung. So when he got the opportunity, he escaped the courthouse and fled to the hills. He was a devil on the run, a six-gun lover, a candle in the wind.
A candle in the wind. What's that? Oh, yes. Bon Jovi, Young Guns.
Blaze of glory.
That's it. Now, the kid returned to his old outlaw ways, as you would if slighted like that. As he had no choice, he couldn't settle down and live an honest life since his enemies and the law were all after him, Matt. While in Fort Sumter, the kid was reunited with his old friends and former regulators, Charlie Bodra and Doc Skerlock. To get some much-needed dosh, cash, the kid started rustling cattle from a chap called John Chisholm. Don't recognise the name? Maybe John Wayne? Western? Okay, forget it. This was a massive, massive mistake.
Chisholm put a huge bounty on his head and also demanded the law sort out the kid.
The kid and his pals went from town to town keeping a low profile while rustling when they could. With killing of Sheriff Brady, the jailbreak, Dolan and Chisholm having Jism
all after him.
After him, there was a multitude of wanted posters offering a reward, and more bounty hunters were coming to look for the kid to take the sizable prize of his head. They were laid up in a town in a bar one day when they overheard a grizzled bounty hunter talking to a local lady of the night.
A whore, no less.
Or harlot. Yeah. Less offensive way. His name was Joe Carter, and like Buckshot Roberts, was known to be handy with the steel, if you know what I mean.
Government health warning there. Bad accents can be bad for your health. Now, shall we just, let's go back now, shall we, Matt, and just see...
what happened.
What happened and how Mr. Carter may have conducted himself. Yep. So there I am at Marty Sanders' place, out of Fort Sumner, when I hear the voice of Longhorn Grizzled Adams boasting of, his dirty deeds, apparently. So I put up my strides. I take out my six shot here, that's my gun, darling. Then I call the Justice Maker.
The Justice Maker.
There he is right there. And I end that this Adam's life with one clear shot through that there infamous black evil heart. Oh yes, I do swear I was so happy I could spit. I collected the reward and I'm $100 the richer. That's easy money for this here Joe Carter.
I do declare.
Feel free.
You are the most impressive man I ever set my eyes upon.
Yeah?
You have the bearing, Mr. Carter, of a champion.
Yeah.
You have the skill of an Indian. The nose of a Roman. So have you spent all that money that you got on the reward? Because me gals can help loosen your wallet as we're loosening your frustration, so to speak.
Well, madam, I wish I could take you up on that kind of offer. But I got a new man in my sights. I don't mean I'm like that.
I didn't relate to you with that.
It's like I'm a bounty hunter. A bigger reward. I need to be on my guard. You know the saying, don't squat with spurs on. Okay? I need to be sharp as an old Indian's hunting knife scalping a man's head right now.
So who are you going to be pointing that long big gun of yours at? I do declare, Mr. Carter, I'm getting all hot and bothered. I swear I am. I'm as hot as an Indian's jockstrap. You sure I can help you relax a little bit? I'm pretty sure I can handle your shooting weapon.
Well, I know what you're thinking. Is this a gun in my pocket? Or am I just pleased to see you? Actually, it's my penis.
No. Oh, my God.
Lady, I'm the man. Remember this. I'm the man who's going to take down that there Billy the Kid. Oh, yeah. Oh, Justice Maker right here is thirsty for a new scumbag to kill. And although he is quite young. He's going to give himself a piece of that outlaw that all those people out there think so impressive. That kid's mine. Just going to track the fellow down and that reward's as good as mine. I'll be right back.
Oh, my God. You're so manly.
Wow, I guess people just communicated in different ways in those days. So, the kid and a number of the regulators overhear Joe Carter talking. Maybe he's a confident guy. He's not that bothered about covering his actions. The kid, as we know, is a mischievous little rascal and can't resist the chance to take play with this cock, sure bounty hunter. So the kid gets up and walks right up to him.
Now remember, listeners, Joe Carter does not know what the kid looks like in person, but only he knows him from the sketches on the wanted posters.
Hello, sir. I could not help overhearing that you were saying about being the man to take down the kid.
Oh, you did, little pop dog? Well, what you saying about it?
I guess that's all pretty tall talk for you and your little lads there to hear. What were you being a combine all, ain't it?
Oh, I just wanted to shake the hand of the man that's going to do it all, though, that's all. I mean, I heard the kid's really, really good, you know? You know, you better be at your best, because he is the best. When you try and tackle him, I hope you're fast, because I heard he's really fast.
You think? You don't know squat boy. It don't take a genius to spot a goat in a flock of sheep. I'll find this kid and I'll end him. Me. He won't see me coming. Okay, boy, you go. You can shake the hand of Joe Carter right now. Go and tell all your friends you did that.
Thank you, sir.
But first, you do me one favor. If you see this Billy the Kid, you come over here and tell me first, you hear?
Of course I will, Joe Carter. Of course I will. Mm. Only I heard that Billy the Kid, he's a great shot. Yeah. Like you, you know? Mm. I heard he's really fast and accurate. And you know what? I heard he's really, really good with the ladies, you know?
Seems to know a lot, kid. He's not first in the bullet, though, right? You scallywag. Now, run along. Muck out them there stables or whatever the head is it you do to earn your keep around here. When I talk to this beautiful, fine lady, I think she's a lady, for my
no,
tricks.
No, thank you.
Oh, now, where was I?
One last request. One last request. Can I see the gun that's gonna kill the kid? I mean, please, sir, I just want to see the gun.
Okay, I get this a lot. All humour here.
No,
okay,
you're so kind,
here
Carter.
We go. Oh, no, that's my penis. Sorry, wrong one. Here we go, this side.
Mr. Carter.
Justice Maker right here. Here it is. That there is the gun that killed Squatting Tiger, the Sioux Chief, remember him? Japsai Jones, the killer. Sombrero Kenneth, terrible man. And of course, the Beast, Bad Bison Brian. All of those folks died in this game.
Can I hold the weapon, sir? You know, wow. That's some fine iron you got there.
Mm-hmm.
I can see you're the man that's used to the fine things in life, Coach O'Connor. I'm not like me. I'm a little scallywag, as you said.
Yeah.
You're the real deal for sure. As Billy the Kid was looking at the weapon,
the gun,
and Carter was enjoying the praise in front of the woman that he was trying to basically breadstroke knob, he was distracted, and the kid very quickly and very deftly opened up the gun, took out the bullets,
all sleight of hands,
and quickly shut it again, wow, whilst he was still looking like he was looking at the weapon.
Impressive. So, I wonder how Carter would have reacted to this. Hey, puppy dog, you hand old Justice Maker back to the hands of Joe Carter before I add you to the tally.
Oh, sir.
You stroke a gun like that, and you might as well be stroking a man's women. You lay your hand on that shaft, you'll land your hand on my lady's smooth bare thigh, understand? You pull the trigger of that gun, and you may as well be fingering.
Here you go, sir. Here you go. I'll hand the gun back to you.
Okay.
Thanks, you're really the best, you know. You're right to say, to call me young, though, you know?
Oh, you're a kid.
I really am young, yes. I'm really a kid.
Yeah, okay.
But like a kid, I'm fast. And I'm accurate. Do you know what? You know what I got? I've got a gun, too.
Was that toy gun?
You want to see mine?
You get it.
Because, you know what, Joe Carter? I think I might be faster than a showboating cowboy like you.
You're a cheeky fairy, ain't you? You gonna make me whip you in front of these ladies here? I might just teach you a lesson, boy.
Kid, not a boy. You came here to kill Billy the Kid, Joe Carter. Well, here I am, and I'll give you the first draw on me.
What the hell?
Come on, make yourself famous. Be the one to take me down. Be the one to take down Billy the Kid. Come on.
So now, Joe Carter realises suddenly who he's been talking to all along. The realisation hits him like a cricket ball bowled by a fast West Indian bowler, with the said ball thundering into his defenceless cock and balls at over 90 miles an hour. We've all been there, cricket fans. If not in reality, then in our nightmares.
Carter draws his gun with the speed and proficiency of a seasoned gunslinger. He pulls the trigger once, twice,
Oh, shit! No goddamn sheen bullets!
The kid smiles a knowing smile.
Oh, shucks! Maybe you're not fast enough after all, Joe Carter. Okay.
Wait.
My turn.
Hang on, kid. And with those two shots, the kid killed Joe Carter, the bounty hunter. In hilarious fashion. Gotta say, you should never celebrate a death, but that was pretty damn cool.
It was
as gunslinging deaths go.
Pretty damn good death.
Now, let's just pop back to Lincoln now. We're back in Lincoln, and a new sheriff has been elected by the name of Pat Garrett. Ring any bells, Western fans? Now, Garrett knew the kid. It's actually rumoured in the past he'd wrestled with him before turning to the law. Often, many sheriffs were criminals before they became lawmen.
That's why they're so good at taking down the baddies.
Indeed.
They knew how they thought because they were them.
And in some case, they knew them and went back and arrested their own comrades. Anyway, but he won the election based on his promise to rid the West of Billy the Kid. Dead or alive!
Now, whilst Garrett was making plans to get the kid himself landed in a pile of buffalo dung, and he and his gang ended up holed up in a ranch house surrounded by a mad posse with dollar signs in their eyes, keen to get their hands on the reward to get him.
That's quite an image.
Now, during the negotiations of this hostage siege, the kid and the posse swapped a hostage to aid in the negotiations. A chap called Carlisle ended up being the kid's hostage, and a regulator called Greathouse went to the posse in return. As the night went on, things heated up.
Ooh.
And the tension grew.
Well, it would.
Till it hit boiling point.
Wow.
And what happens, Wayne, when things hit boiling point?
Well, things are then at a severe risk of bubbling over.
Oh, yes.
In reality, what happened next is up for debate. But a single shot was fired by the posse at the house. Can't miss, surely. Which was then followed by a window shattering and a shadowy figure jumping through it and making a run for it as fast as his chap-legged legs could carry him. I should point out here that the chaps, of course, are the leather over-trousers things that you wear to stop chafing.
Oh,
you
we know, don't
from
like
the horse riding.
Oh, vicious.
Yes. Then there was a burst of gunfire from the posse. The sprinting man fell dead. But it was Carlisle, shot by his own posse, Matt.
Now, the posse, though, Wayne, would later report that an accidental shot was fired from their side.
An accidental burst of gunfire.
And then they saw Carlisle leap out of the window and try to run for the house. The kid then threw himself halfway through the window, took a deliberate aim, and shot the deputy Carlisle dead in cold blood. That's what the posse would say.
That would not explain, Matt, why the posse, seeing their comrade dead, instead of seeking revenge on him and killing the gang, instead took the body and left. Perhaps they were filled with regret and remorse for killing one of their own, Matt. Actually, the kid wrote that when Carlisle heard the gunshots outside, he thought Greathouse was killed by his posse, and then dove out the window and was killed by his own posse. Either way, the kids escaped this time.
Yes. Now, it was December 1880, and a game of prairie cat and mountain mouse was happening between Billy the Kid and the Sheriff Pat Garrett.
Don't ask, listeners.
The Sheriff hatched a cunning plan. The kid received a note from a former Fort Sumner resident saying that Garrett and his posse had left and were heading south because they had previously been at Fort Sumner. The kid and his gang mounted up and made the cold ride through the snow to Fort Sumner, seeking a place to rest for the winter. What the kid didn't know was that he was riding into a trap.
Oh, it's a trap!
It's a Akbar there.
Yeah, keeping to the Star Wars theme of earlier.
We know how excited about Star Wars our listeners are going to be at this time, so
course,
we thought we'd give you your dose.
Garrett himself sent the phony note, though, right? So Garrett sent this phony note and was waiting, Wayne, in the shadows of an old military hospital.
Oh, typical.
For the kid to make his appearance. A cheeky bit of subterfuge.
As the kid and his gang remember that's four members, including his lifelong best friend, Tom O'Folliard, rode towards the hospital, Garrett whispered,
"There's them!"
to his men, and they opened fire. The lawman thought the rider leading the way was the kid and aimed for him first, but it was poor old O'Folliard. Shot in the chest. He killed over in his saddle. Poor old O'Folliard. The others rode hellbound. Fell over into the fog and escaped again. Running away a lot. Garrett and his men carried poor old O'Folliard inside a room in the old hospital and laid him down the floor where he died, while the men played a game of poker. That's the hard-arsed West for you, Matt.
Tough and as rough as an Indian chief's weathered face. Mm. The cat and mouse game resumed for another 3 days until one night Garrett tracked down the kid to a stone house in Stinking Springs.
Nice name.
The lawman waited outside quietly till dawn, until they heard movement and voices coming from inside the house. Garrett then instructed his men that when the kid appeared, they were to open fire and to kill him.
Great plan. He's a thinker, this guy.
It's a genius plan.
Yeah.
A genius. He's a mastermind.
He is.
He's a mastermind.
It's like Poirot or something.
He's like the art of war. Suddenly, a figure came out of the house. Garrett recognised the wide brim hat. It was what Billy always wore. So he told his men to shoot.
Here he goes again.
This time, it was Charlie Bowdry.
Oh, for...
Bang! That's two of Billy's best mates killed in a matter of 3 days.
Oh, dear. Well, the kids held out for another day with what remained of his gang before surrendering.
Understandably so. He must be grief-stricken to have lost two of his
best
mates.
Well, you know, he's very famous. On the one-on-one fights, he does well, but he seems to be doing a lot of running away and surrendering. Yeah. Anyway, he and his men were then transported back to stand trial. Billy must have known he was at risk of this. He's not going to get off well, surely. The trial of Billy the Kid began on March 30th for the killing of Buckshot Roberts, remember him, and the murder of Sheriff Brady. It was largely a show trial, really, as you might expect. The kid had no witnesses, of course, or kin, indeed, who could be summoned to testify on his behalf, you know. So it's pretty much a one-way traffic destination. And that destination, Matt, was Guiltyville.
The judge, being a fair and honest and, you know, uncorruptible guy, summed the case up with such bias, he was pretty much saying, "If you don't find the defendant guilty, you're a bunch of mindless idiots. I tell you, you're idiots." Now, the kid was brought before the judge, but then, surprisingly, with that kind of bias, was sentenced to death.
That is a surprise.
He was then loaded into a coach and spent the next 5 days travelling back to Lincoln, where he was to be hanged until he was dead, dead, dead.
Well, that judge can go to hell. Hell, hell. One nasty chap called Olinger took advantage of the kid's helpless situation by taunting and provoking him to escape, as he was desperate to kill the kid. Olinger had previously killed one of Billy's pals, actually, but the kid kept his sense of humour and ignored him. But the kid, being the kid, never forgot what he said and how he was treated by Olinger. Would it matter, Matt? Let's see.
On April the 21st, the kid arrived in Lincoln. There was no suitable jail for him, though, in Lincoln, so he was confined in a back room adjoined to Pat Garrett's, you know, the sheriff's office. He was remained handcuffed and shackled at all times and was either chained to the floor or a line was drawn across the room, which he was forbidden to cross,
effective.
Or he would be shot.
Well, he's effective.
To eliminate any chance of escape, Garrett had two of his deputies, including this Olinger chap, with the kid in the room at 24-hour guard. The two guards, as I said, were Olinger and a mild-mannered chap called James Bell.
Oh. Well, about a week after the kid's arrival, Garrett left, leaving these two guards in charge still. And on April 28th at noon, the kid saw his golden opportunity. Someone slipped up, Matt. He knew it was Olinger's turn to take the other prisoners, who were also confined at the courthouse, which meant only the other guard, the mild-mannered Bell, would be at the courthouse to guard Billy. So, as soon as Olinger was long gone,
The kid made his cunning move.
That kid. Oh, that kid. Oh. That kid.
The only time the kid was allowed to leave the room was for visits to the privy. That's a bathroom for our younger listeners.
Yeah.
And for our older listeners, of course, it's the shitter. So he asked Belle to take him outside.
The kid on strolling to the privy with Belle.
Shitter.
The kid on strolling to the privy with Belle. Shitter. Slipped his small hand out of the cuffs.
Okay.
He then whacked Belle over the head and jerked Belle's revolver out of the holster and told him to throw up his hands. So he'd basically got Belle's gun for a bit of slight hand. But instead, Belle should have held his hands up, right? But instead, Belle panicked and he ran towards the stairs trying to escape. The kid shot him.
Oh, well. Olinger heard the shots fired and darted outside. As he rounded the gate into the yard of the courthouse, he heard a familiar voice.
Hello, Bob. You had yourself a nice meal there?
Oh, shucks. What you done, Billy?
Olinger, I just heard that the kid killed Belle.
Yeah. And he's killed me too.
Right again, Olinger. Say hi to Brady and Buckshot Roberts for me and tell them I see him soon.
The kid then let Olinger have it with both barrels, and his tormentor and killer of his friend fell dead as a dodo.
He exited stage left.
He threw off his mortal coil.
As dead as flares and crimped shirts.
Very dead indeed.
He's dead. Now, instead of making a run for the border, as he seemed to be making a habit up till now, the kid hung around in the county. And meanwhile, Sheriff Garrett was doing a low-profile search for the kid. Unlike before, he wouldn't form a large posse this time, nor would he even try and catch him alive. He's too dangerous.
He'd had enough.
Yeah. His plan was to sneak up on the kid and kill him. Again, Sun Tzu, the Art of War, this guy, you know, nothing gets past him. Now, by early July,
I'm going to sneak up on him and then I'm going to kill him.
I'll shoot him with a bullet, he'll go into his body and then he'll die.
Yeah, I done.
So, good old Garrett. Now, by early July, Garrett received word that the kid was in or near Fort Sumner again. And so Garrett took a couple of trusted pals with him, men he could trust, men he liked, men he admired. And he headed to Fort Sumner. Quietly this time.
It was July the 14th, 1881. It was late and the residents were bedding down.
You're right, Matt.
Sorry. It was late and the residents were bedding down for the night. Garrett had tracked the kid down and he slipped out of the shadows and went to Pete Maxwell's house.
That was a known friend of the kid at the time.
Yeah, to ask him about the kid. Now, Garrett entered Maxwell's room and woke the sleeping man with a prod in the face with his weapon.
Nasty.
Maxwell awoke, open-mouthed, to see a hard shaft just inches from his face. Not again, he thought. Then thankfully realised it was a gun.
It's time with the scouts. At that moment, the kid, who was staying at a friend's house, was getting hungry, as you might. The kid grabbed a butcher knife and stepped outside, walked across the plaza to Maxwell's house, intent on getting himself a lovely bit of meat. But as he approached the porch in the failing light, he almost stepped over the two lying next to each other men. The kid didn't recognise the men and backed into Maxwell's dark bedroom.
Not for the first time, I'm sure. Once inside, he walked over to the bed and in a low voice said,
"Hey, Pete, who are those fellows outside?"
Garrett was sitting at the foot of the bed and Maxwell lay still and whispered,
"It's him."
The kid walked closer to the bed and asked again, "Pete, who are the men?" Then he saw the silhouette of a figure sitting in front of him. The kid moved back. And Garrett would later say,
He must have recognized me, for he went backwards in a cat-like movement, and I jerked my weapon. I said, I jerked my weapon, and fired off my load.
So Garrett fired twice. The kid fell to the floor, listeners. And then both Garrett and Maxwell shot their bolts out the door. The kid was shot through the heart and gasped for a minute or two and died. Now the men outside huddled outside the door and heard the kid's death rattle, his last sort of rasping breath. It was certain the kid was dead. As he was certain the kid was dead, Maxwell got a candle. It was dark. I don't know, I was always going to use it for otherwise. and the men entered the room. They found the kid lying on his back in the middle of the room with a gun in one hand and a knife.
Dildo in the other.
and a knife.
A knife in the other.
In the other. He went out packing.
He did go out packing. The residents were awakened by the gunfire and walked out into the plaza towards Maxwell's house. Upon learning that the kid was dead, men were shaking their fists at Garrett and women were weeping. He was loved. He was one loved son of a bitch.
So,
now,
to see how much of a loved son of a bitch he was, let's get a few quotes here, shall we? We've got a friend and a Fort Sumner resident, actually, was commenting on the night before the kid was killed. It was a chap called Frank Lobato, so let's hear what he had to say about the kid.
Billy had been very popular at Fort Sumner and had a great many friends, all of whom were indignant towards damn pet Garrett. If a leader had been present, Garrett and his two officers would have received the same fate that they dealt Billy.
Now, Garrett allowed the kid's friends to take his body across the plaza to the carpenter's shop to give him a wake. The kid's body was then prepared for burial, and at noon he was laid to rest next to his two friends, Tom O'Folliard and Charlie Bowdry.
Now, we've got another Fort Sumner resident here, actually. He also helped dig the kid's grave, so he obviously respected the guy. This is a chap called Vicente Otero.
I was at Fort Sumner the night when the kid was killed. I went to the carpenter's shop and stood at the wake all that night. Jesus Silver made a wooden box, which served as a coffin for the kid. The next day, Silver and I dug the kid's grave and buried the body in the old graveyard. I know the exact spot of Billy's burial, though I have not been to the graveyard for many years.
After the kid's death, Garrett was viewed with suspicion and in many cases open hostility. Though there were many who were grateful for Garrett ridding the territory of the kid, just as many felt it was foul play. So, to win public opinion, Garrett wrote a biography on Billy the Kid. Bit strange. And if one reads it closely, you can actually sense Garrett's remorse.
In the end, the book made a Judas out of Garrett for going after his old friend and killing him. The biography ended up turning Billy the Kid, though, into a legend and Pat Garrett into a villain. For the rest of his life, Garrett was haunted by guilt for what he'd done. He would become uncomfortable when people asked him about the killing, and he would later hint to friends that he wished he'd never took the job to hunt down the great Billy the Kid.
So, why did we do this podcast, you ask? Well, history has been pretty unfair to Billy the Kid, really, we thought. I don't think any other Western historical figures has had his name dragged through the mud and represented so inaccurately and negatively, actually. He never really robbed banks or trains at all. Not like Jesse James, for example. He never killed without a probable cause or, you know, extreme provocation or in self-defence. He was never a large-scale rustler. He didn't raid ranches, didn't sort of terrorise inhabitants, none of that sort of stuff. He never hurt, raped or insulted women.
Or cattle.
or cattle, and he didn't harm children or the elderly. So he's just like, you know, sort of a bit of a romantic rogue in Matt's eyes.
So who was the kid? He was an orphan who was unintentionally fell into being an outlaw. A lifestyle he couldn't get out of. He was trapped. He tried to make peace with the law and his enemies, and both times it backfired on him badly, making things worse. He was never the captain of the Regulators. Nope. He was just a fighter, a gunslinger. He tried only in, he killed only in self-defence and during the war. The men he killed weren't angels, but they were either bullies or outlaws themselves. In short, he was just a normal kid that had a run of bad luck, and without the guidance of his parents or of a mentor, he lost his way in life. Perhaps the best way to sum him up is via one of his close friends.
This is a chap called Higinio Salazar. He was a Regulator and very close friend.
Higinio Salazar.
The kid was the bravest man I ever knew. He did not know what fear meant. Everyone who knew him loved him. He was kind and good to poor people, and he was always a gentleman, no matter where he was. When in danger, he was the coolest man I ever did see. He acted like a flash from a gun. Musket flash, you know, sort of when you fire a bullet, the fire comes out the end. He was quick as a kitten. Not a newborn kitten, because they're useless. And when he aimed his pistol and fired, something or someone dropped. He never missed his mark.
So thanks again for listening to another episode of Historical. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did recording it. Billy the Kid has always been a fascinating character in history, and for me personally, and Wayne, and we hope...
More me.
And we hope we brought a bit of the Wild West alive for you today.
And I feel we should, at this point, apologise to some of our North American listeners, of which there are many, for some of the outrageous accents that you heard today.
We accept the accents are not historically accurate.
Yes. Or indeed geographically accurate.
Or in any way accurate.
Coming up next, hopefully we won't have quite such a long gap between podcasts. We're getting ourselves organised. And coming up next, we're going to go back to a spooky subject. This is that gives you a clue. This is a request from one of our listeners. Next time, we'll be talking about witchcraft. Want to add anything, Matt?
No, not really. Just to say, you know, all the best to you listeners. And Wayne, pub?
Pub it is.
Pub, yes.